Welcome to another episode of Outside the Box. My name is Justin Havelock, and I'm joined this week by two very good friends of mine, special guests, Carson Picard and Kyle Bland. How are you guys doing this week?
I'm doing great.
Doing good.
I'm glad we're very good friends also. Thanks. I'm glad.
Promoted.
I'm glad we've reached that status. I'll put that in my bio.
We'll know each other. I'll put it that way.
Okay.
Well, for those at home who may not know you guys, why don't you guys just quickly introduce yourself?
All right. So I'm Kyle Bland, Director of Research and Data Analytics at PitcherList. So I'm behind a lot of the stats that you like and have nothing to do with the stats you don't at PitcherList. hopefully PLV is one of those stats you like, because that's my brainchild and that's what I brought to this.
I'm Carson. I'm not Kyle Bland. I'm a writer on the Going Deep team at PitcherList. Should have an article out later this week. I'll probably plug in like an hour or so. And me and Justin are Dynasty League co-managers. We were at one point fellow Canadian residents, not anymore, but I'll be back there eventually. I'm excited to talk some ball here.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very excited to have you guys on today. Appreciate it. So yeah, let's get right into it. We got a lot of big news, a lot of injuries and stuff going on this week. So started off, we've got Tristan Casas moving to the 60-day IL with a rib injury. I know Kyle and I talked a little bit about this last week, but we've got a bit more of a clear timeline now. He's set to miss at least 8 weeks or so. And in the meantime, the Red Sox have claimed Garrett Cooper off of waivers. So what do you guys think of the Garrett Cooper addition in Boston? And do we think that anyone gets a bump in playing time here?
I think Garrett Cooper, I think he is someone that I think a lot of people were kind of surprised from the Cubs. Yeah, I think it was a lot of people were surprised that he was available. And I think it's a solid pickup, someone, you know, with a good bat that'll fill the hole at least momentarily. What are his splits? Because that's always something to note, because sometimes like Fenway, it's always a little weirder, you know, when you see pitchers or hitters, and it's always something to keep in mind. Sometimes when you're going to a wacky park like Fenway or Great American Ballpark or something like that, there's always some weird things that could happen in a new location. They really turn it on. I feel like that could happen to Cooper. So I think it's a good move for the Red Sox to keep their weirdly good momentum going. And I think he could be pretty valuable here on the next month or so, month and a half.
Yeah. Carson makes some good points. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he does. Yeah, in Fenway, righty bat, so pole sides is the green monster there, so that'll probably keep his BABIP. It's been pretty elevated. It's like 390 right now, but it's going to come down, but being in Fenway, it'll come down a little bit less than you'd expect. Fun hitter's park to get some hits to drop in. Yeah, I think it's a good pickup, interesting pickup. I'm curious kind of who gets shifted around and where, but he's a benefit to their team for sure.
Definitely, yeah. He had 17 home runs in 123 games last year with a .251 average. So he's definitely someone that can contribute with some of the injuries they've got there in Boston.
And they've got a lot, man.
Yeah, they do. I know we were talking about it before the podcast. They seem to be dropping like flies there. Sticking in the AL East, my Toronto Blue Jays lost Kevin Kiermaier to a hip injury this week and called up Addison Barger. Davis Schneider has been playing more in left field. What do we think about these two young guys? Or is there anyone else in Toronto that we're interested in?
I like Barger. I think he's kind of had an up and down prospect career. Pretty solid 2022, down last year, especially in AAA. He was under 100 WRC plus, which is not what you want in the minors. If you're below average there, why get called up? But this year he's been mashing. He figured it out. He cut his K rate down. It was under 18% in AAA. and just tapped into his power stroke. I think he's kind of, he's always been a guy who has a little bit of pop to him, and a good like low 20s, now kind of high teens K rate. It's been a little high in the first couple games, but that's small sample size. But I think that's a good pickup. I think Schneider, I think he has a lot going for him, but there's a ton of swing and miss in his game, and that just generally scares me. But that's a profile that has worked for people before. I'm just not a big better on it.
Schneider for like fantasy applications is, his outlook is very different if you're in a batting average versus an OBP league or a points league, obviously. But if you're in an OBP league, as you should be, if you're in an OBP league, he does offer a lot more because he has a really good plate discipline. He'll get on base a lot. And it's just a lot more appealing profile, and it's a lot easier to buy into it. We still have a really small sample size on him. And I mean, Justin, you've probably watched at this point, like every major league at bat he's had. But he's definitely someone who's low batting average, high slugging, and then will have enough walks to, you know, make up for any lack of contact, theoretically, you know.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I know, as you said, I've watched just about every plate appearance he's had in the big leagues. I know my mom and I are both searching hard for some of those mustaches the Blue Jays were giving out last season.
What was the thing about Schneider? Like, you had the best... Sorry, we were the best, what, like 2 or 3 week stretch in MLB history or debut?
Oh, yeah. He was nuclear last year.
Like, he was ridiculous. It was like Bonds-esque.
Yeah. I think it was most home runs in his major league debut through, I can't remember exactly how many games. I'm sure one of our listeners knows.
It was like 2 weeks, I think 2 or 3 weeks. It was ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it had, he's fallen back a little more to earth, but like still like doing well. So I like him.
Yeah. He'll definitely play a big part in this Toronto offense. I know I've seen some stats out there. You know, just the other day I talked about on the podcast that the Jays were 10-1 when Schneider starts in the lineup. So definitely somebody that needs to be getting more playing time. I know that stats obviously changed a little bit since, especially with the Jays having a 5-game slump, but you know, he's a guy that the Jays tend to win when he's in the lineup. So generally a guy that probably won't be sitting on the bench for much longer. So moving over to the Washington Nationals, Lane Thomas was placed on the 10-day IL with a grade 2 MCL sprain. Probably going to miss a bit of time here. And Jacob Young has really been a very popular pickup, I know, in a lot of leagues. He's got a .333 average and 10 stolen bases so far this season. Do we believe that Jacob Young is legit?
Jacob Young, his bat is not legit. He has no barrels so far. His exit velocity is poor. He doesn't hit the ball hard. He whiffs barely any, strikes out not terribly often, but basically doesn't walk at all. Like this is a very David Fletcher-y hitter profile. Am I right there? Okay. Of someone who makes contact, but it's never hard at all. That's what I get. But the legs are absolutely legit. Pulling it up here, 97th percentile sprint speed. Like you touched on, 10 stolen bases. He had two today, right? And like he's been nasty on the base pass, hasn't been caught stealing yet. And so, I mean, if you're looking for stolen bases at all costs, he could be kind of a nice guy there. The bat, I don't think there's really anything there to talk about. He has a .309 average right now. He's overperforming his ex-WOBA. There's maybe some nice batting average stuff there, but he's going to offer next to no slugging. Could be a decent pickup on like a nice traditional 5x5 league. I think the bat's legit, the contact's legit, absolutely everything else is in the trash.
Yeah, yeah, definitely agree that he's like a 1.5 category guy of for sure. I mean, he's got more stolen bases than the Twins. I know we touched on that talking before the pod, but yeah, that he's that's what you get him for, is the stolen bases. I definitely agree with that profile that it's a zero power, just absolutely zero power, but that's like not his game, that he's got, you know, that he's going to slap hit, get on base by hitting. He's not 1.6% walk rate right now, which is brutal. Like, he is being carried by a 309 average. But I do think that he's like a true talent, at least right now, based on what his underlying metrics are. Like, he fares out really well by our PLV contact ability, that he's, you know, a standard deviation and a half better than average. And so he's a guy who's probably like a 280 type hitter, 290 maybe. And that's, I mean, that'll play. He's definitely not going to hurt you on average. And yeah, he's just going to rack up stolen bases. They've been jumping him around in the lineup between like first and ninth. And that'll be a big factor, because if he's first, that's going to get you run opportunities, more plate appearances, obviously. But I mean, either way, those are two spots where he's going to have the green light to just run wild on the bases when he gets on.
Yeah. Carson, you brought up David Fletcher. I think he reminds me a bit of Miles Straw.
Yeah.
You know, there's absolutely no power in that bat, but he's definitely a guy who's going to get on base and steal you quite a few bases.
Sorry, David Fletcher is just a name that's perpetually in the back of my mind, always like
rent free.
It's one of my all time favorite players. I love that guy.
For sure.
I miss him.
Next up, Kyle Bradish is set to return this week. Will make his season debut either against the New York Yankees or against the Cincinnati Reds in Great American Ballpark. So there's not much to say here other than, are we starting him this week? Is he going to be a still ill, or do we want to take a beat with a rough schedule to be coming off the IL and making your season debut?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. He's going to be one of the higher upside starters you can have, for sure. Like, his slider is absolutely legit. I know 2023, across his whole arsenal, he was a top 20 pitcher by PLV. We really loved how his pitches are, what their stuff's like, how he locates them. Like, he's a very, very, very good pitcher. I definitely agree. Like, he's coming back from injury. He's only been facing, you know, minor league caliber guys. Maybe he's still got to shake the rust off a bit. But I think he has the stuff that he could strike out his way through one of these early starts. And especially, I feel like Cincinnati, Great America Small Park is terrifying. But I feel like they just run hot and cold. And sometimes you can catch Cincy on one of those days where the whole lineup is just striking out left and right. And you can maybe back your way into a really useful start from him there.
The entire time Kyle was talking, I'm looking at the GIF of Kyle Bradish is slider. and so, because it's absolutely ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, I think like by stuff plus, like, you know, stuff plus, wasn't it like something like 160 or just something bonkers? Like, it was ridiculously high as slider was.
It was head and shoulders above like everything else. Yeah.
It was absurd. Yeah. I mean, it's genuinely one of the best pitches in baseball, straight up, certainly by a starter. And it's going to be interesting to see if it works. If you're in a position where you need a huge start, Bradish has as much upside as you'll find about basically anyone, certainly anyone available. I'm starting him. It's a risk, sure. Assuming I'm not majorly up in points or categories or anything like that. I have ace gonna ace. Like, he's close to that, right? New York scares me a bit. Cincinnati scares me a bit, but none of them are like, I don't think either of those, even at Cincinnati, it's not like we were talking about Colorado earlier before the podcast about like, is that actually scary anymore? But it's not like necessarily the Dodgers tier where I'm really considering like sitting almost anyone against them. Kyle Bradish is great. He's super exciting, and he should probably get the win if he's pitching for Baltimore. So I think he's a pretty easy yes for me.
Yeah, I think we just about covered it. So getting into some of the transactions that have happened this week. Victor Scott II was sent down for the St. Louis Cardinals, with Michael Cianni seeing the bulk of the playing time at center field now. Jordan Walker was also sent down this week, which is probably good for him to sort of get himself right before coming back up. And we know that there's been a lot of conversation about the logjam in St. Louis with Tommy Edman about to come back. So I think this could be the best thing for the Cardinals long term, especially because, you know, it's going to be hard for Jordan Walker to get right if he's just sitting on the bench all the time. What do we make of this St. Louis Cardinals lineup?
I mean, it's been nice that, you know, the stalwarts, the Goldschmidt, Arenado, that they started to remember that they're like Hall of Fame caliber hitters kind of thing, that they realize that they're actually really, really good. So it's a lineup that's has been pretty brutal, but is definitely on the upswing. Wilson Contreras has been lights out. Like, he's absolutely been bailing them out. I'm not scared by it, but I can see how they could put together a pretty useful lineup that'll win them a fair amount of games.
Yeah, Mason Wynn too has also been really good. Interesting. Yeah. I think more money was lost on Victor Scott in Fab than money was lost in the entire Great Recession. I have never seen so much hype on a player coming up, and then within like a week and a half, that hype has not just evaporated, but I think it has gone negative. I mean, everyone was talking about Victor Scott for like a total of 3 days, and then he had a batting average under 100. I think the Cardinals are an absolutely fascinating team for so many reasons. They have an interesting mix of should be exciting young players that aren't producing. They have a mix of talented veterans, aging borderline washed veterans. That word's overused, but still. I almost like don't know. I think it's almost too early. I feel like I'm going to need another month of looking at the Cardinals. They're a weird experiment of, it almost seems like the Cardinals are being run like a team from 25 years ago. They don't seem to be serious in like, I feel like they watched Moneyball and aligned with the scouts. I don't know what to make of them at all. They're a weird team. I think their lineup is, I'm going to wait and see. There's just a few guys that, like you were touching on earlier, like if Goldschmidt and Arenado can be not the players that even they were 2 years ago, but just like good, it's a totally different outlook. I think it's really good Jordan Walker's being sent down. He obviously needs to develop more. He needs some more time in the oven. If Newt Barr can be developed and can get more production, that's going to be huge for them. We'll see what happens. But yeah, the Cardinals are, I'm still out on their offense for now, but we'll check back in a month. That's my diagnosis. That's my analysis.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I know I was definitely caught in that great Fab recession that you mentioned. Kyle Blandos as well. We're in the same TGFBI league, and I spent over $100 getting Victor Scott because of those 94 stolen bases last year, only to drop him 2 weeks later. Fun times.
I mean, you have to take the shot. And I stand by, I think our PLV hitter metrics, I think he got pretty unlucky. He had made really good swing decisions. Not really good. He made above average swing decisions. He made solid contact. Pretty bad power, but that's not why you're getting him, kind of like we were talking about with Jacob Young. I think he just got unlucky, and he's the kind of like organizational player where like, you can't be unlucky. Like, you need to hit the ground running for them to like want to keep you up, and he just didn't do it. So he's down.
And, you know, he's 23. So like, he's at that age still where time in the oven is sometimes necessitated. We'll see how he does. Someone to keep an eye on for sure.
Yeah.
But maybe not spend $100 in that.
Yeah. Definitely a great buy low window in Dynasty, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So speaking of prospect news, we've got two big ones this week. One that came out sort of right before we recorded, actually. Pete Crow Armstrong of the Chicago Cubs was called up alongside Matt Mervis. And then Joey Lopperfito with the Houston Astros. I know there's been a lot of talk about Jose Abreu's struggles, and it seems like Joey Lopperfito is going to get some time at first base, and hopefully maybe Abreu can go to the bench for a little bit and get right. because I know a lot of people were hoping that we'd see that bounce back year from him. So what do we think of these two, or I guess three, with Matt Mervis prospect call-ups?
One of the things that worries me about Robert Beto is he carries a 30% strikeout rate in AAA. That's not inherently like ringing alarm bells. That's not inherently a terrible thing. But it's really that jump when you're going, and especially with his profile, it's so slugging dependent. There's so much relying on that power. And, you know, that ISO to carry over 200. If you're striking out that swing and misses that high, jumping up yet another level to the majors, it's a difficult jump. And I feel like we've seen so many times someone be able to hit really well in AAA, jump on that AAA fastball, the breaking ball. The major league is just a whole different game. Now, granted, will he be better than Jose Abreu? Probably. It would be hard not to, but I would be a little apprehensive to look at what's it say right now, like a 144 WRC plus in AAA this year. I'd be apprehensive to say that profile. I'm immediately thinking that's going to transfer over. As for PCA, one of my favorite prospects. I love anyone with a great glove. 80 grade glove? Is like 70, 80 grade glove center field? I mean, absolute ridiculous out there. He will be in the lineup for that alone because it is absolutely like generational good, if all this reports are right. He has a home run. That's fun. And I like him. I don't trust his bat, really. He carried a low walk rate and a high strikeout rate almost throughout his time. He's still really young. But it was never – this is a glove-first prospect with a serviceable bat. He will be in a good lineup, so there might be some good RBI opportunities there. But I think if he has potential, I think PCA absolutely has potential to stick in this Cubs lineup if he can produce and, you know, hit at like even close to 100 WRC plus. Because like I said, his glove is so good, he could stay in there regardless.
Yeah, I think I definitely agree. Pete Armstrong, he's going to return value for the Cubs just by playing defense. That it almost is like the grades are so superfluous. They're so wonderful that like, he's going to be a net positive, you know, even if he hits like a pitcher almost. So he's going to get his playing time. Yeah. He'll luck into a homer every now and then. That's great. Looking at Matt Mervis, he seems like he's a first baseman, and he seems like if he gets a lot of playing time, he's like a 20 homer kind of guy. Like he's got a fine average, but like he's middling homer, middling contact with like no real defensive chops, and he's not going to steal bases. He's performed. He's had kind of like the poor man's Freddie Freeman vibes is what I'm getting from that. But like you need to hit like Freddie Freeman for that to be a really like good profile, and he's just not at that level, both in terms of his contact, his selection, or his power. And then, yeah, getting back to Lo Profeto, I'm really excited. It should be a lot of fun. He's not quite a three true outcome guy because he doesn't actually walk as much as you'd think. But yeah, the dude's got like legit power. But as Carson mentioned, running a 30% K rate, but you know, just some comps from like last year for what you could expect of, you know, maybe on the high end, you're looking at like Jake Berger last year, where he's going to get you 30 home runs, really solid ISO, pretty decent, like usable average. And like, that's a useful player, 350 wOBA. Like that's what you want. Like that is your boom or bust slugger kind of mentality. And then maybe on the low end, you end up with Eugenio Suarez, like high K's every once in a while when he hits something, it's going over the wall, but like a 230 average is pretty close to not like to making the power not matter. It's exciting. You know, I'm hoping that the higher end outcomes happen, that he, you know, just continues to mash balls. I'm a little sad that they called him up after the Mexico City series, because that could have been a blast. Just watching him hit tanks like 600 feet, but what are you going to do? Yeah, I'm excited to watch him. I think PCA is like a great real life prospect who will help the Cubs. He's not going to be really useful in fantasy, I don't think. Mervis, I have my doubts about, even though he's performed in the minors. And then Loperfido, yeah, I think the dude's a slugger. Whether he's a good slugger or a bad slugger remains to be seen.
Yeah, I don't think Mervis is going to have a future as a reliever either, given his outing the other day.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Not exactly going to crack the reliever ranks anytime soon. Of these three, do you guys have a favorite?
I dig the long ball. Like, I want to see like how much of just this home run barrage sticks for Loperfido against like MLB caliber pitching. And it's also like, if he's running a 30% K rate in the minors, maybe he breaks 40. Like, it's like, I'm excited because the high could be super high, but the lows could also be like interestingly low.
Pete Crow Armstrong, the thing that might be interesting to me is he's so young that we kind of don't know. There's so much in the box and we don't really know exactly what's there. I don't have a ton of faith in his bat. That's never been his MO as a prospect, but he's also 22 years old. And I mean, so far in his very, very short stint, he looks better at the plate than he did last year, where he got called up, looked absolutely like he was outmatched. Come back this year, and in his extremely small sample, you know, he's got 4 hits to his name, he's slugged a bit, he has a barrel, you know. It's like the really small things that I like to see, and maybe there's something there, you know, that could stick. And for such a young prospect, there absolutely is that potential for just a total turnaround in their immediate, like, short-term outlook. I like Pete Armstrong a lot. I don't think he's going to be a great bat. I hope he is. I like Loperfido. Actually, does he have outfield eligibility right now? He probably would on a lot of sites. Yeah. So if he gets outfield eligibility, at least in the short term, that should be really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that just alone might help a bit. I think that could be the tiebreaker for me.
I think I saw someone mentioned that he might have second base eligibility on ESPN, which
that'd be crazy.
That's wild. Like, if you can get that profile at second base, you run to your wire and pick that up
for sure. Yeah, I think I might have to go Pete Crow Armstrong. I know one thing we haven't necessarily talked about with him is the speed. This is a guy that can steal bases. Oh, yeah. You know, obviously he has to get on base first. That's going to be the big question with that strikeout rate that we talked about. But, you know, 37 stolen bases last year and, you know, 20 home runs. You know, like you said, Carson, he's still a young guy that's still developing. So I think I'm just going to swing for the fences with Pete Crow Armstrong, but I don't think you can go wrong with really any of these three guys. But Loperfido would probably be my second choice because, you know, as you said, Kyle, you know, Blandalytics digs the long ball. In a very similar vein, Heston Kjerstad came up this week. We haven't seen him start a ton yet, but he's, you know, again, very small sample, but he has not looked good so far. And I know this is someone who struggled last year when he got called up. Obviously, he absolutely destroyed AAA, so I don't want to exactly overreact to this, but I know I posted in our chat earlier some of his chase rate numbers. What do we think about Heston Kjerstad? Do we think he's a guy that maybe we want to ease off on in redraft leagues? Obviously, the talent is there for dynasty leagues, but or do you think this is just small sample size noise and in a week I'll sound like a crazy person?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you're going to sound like a crazy person. I think it's it's small sample size, but it is the performance combined with how they're using him is worrying enough for me that I'm of the kind of mind where I would leave him on the wire if he's there or on someone else's bench. And then if some combination of, well, they still don't play him a lot, but he's performing better, or they start to give him better playing time, more consistent playing time, and, you know, he starts to he has life at the plate, then maybe I'll start to target him. That I believe that he has the ability to do it, and he might be someone that's on like my watch list to just keep tabs on and see like, okay, he's showing a pulse. Like let's try and buy low, or let's try and pick that up kind of before the boom hits. Cause yeah, it's tough because he's kind of got that same thing that Jackson Holliday has, where they're like AAA isn't challenging them, but then they're just completely overwhelmed. And I mean, it's 5 plate appearances of Kjerstad, but like it's something that is kind of interesting because we just saw it with Holliday that like, even if they demote him, what can he work on? Like if he's so resolutely beating AAA pitching that like I'm kind of curious to see. And it's just, they got to make a move at some point, right? Like they can't call him up just to play him every like third game. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Kjerstad is interesting. He's Jared Kelenic vibes, someone who absolutely crushes AAA, absolutely cannot hit major league pitching, it seems, or at least, you know, in 2023 in a small sample, he was able to get the bat on the ball a bit more, have a bit more slugging, but, it's always a weird line with, don't want to put this term on them, but like this quadruple A sort of playing, at least that caliber. Mm-hmm. And for a fantasy, especially in redraft, I feel like if I'm managing my team, I need this player. I need them to prove that they can hit at the major league level. I could buy into the prospect hype all I want, but there's so many guys I can do that with. With Kjerstad, he's tearing it up at AAA against minor league pitching. He is absolutely looking dreadful at the plate, properly dreadful in the majors. And so I need to be proven that he can hit a bit. And I mean, like we're talking, it's not even a small sample size. This is a microscopic sample size. But even drawing back from 2023 to just expand it another 30 odd plate appearances, it's not like it's that much better of an outlook. You know, his chase rate was still crazy high, and he obviously, when he connects, he can make great contact. Someone to keep an eye on, I think, but an eye on is the operative phrase here, and not on your roster. Maybe, you know, if you have the room for whatever reason, you can stash him on your bench and just kind of play wait and see. But I really wouldn't put too much stock into it yet.
And it's Baltimore is a really tough lineup for an outfielder to crack right now. Like you've got Mullins manning center, and he's, you know, the bats come around. He's hitting above average this year, in addition to very good center field defense. Santander's doing his thing, great with the stick. And then now Kowser has just come out of nowhere and is lighting the world on fire. And it's like, there's your three outfield spots. Where are you going to fit Kjerstad? Are you going to DH one of those guys? Probably not, especially on days where you're resting Adley. Like that's just going to be a tough lineup to crack. And we're seeing that now. And then in what little playing time he's getting, he's not really performing. So I don't see how he can kind of force his way in unless he goes on like a Schneider-esque home run barrage.
Yeah, I agree. You know, you can add Brian O'Hearn to that list with first base, because I know Kjerstad's played a bit of first base. O'Hearn's been mashing to start the year. And I mean, even just today, you've got Jackson Holliday going back down to the minors, Jordan Westberg missing a bit of time with a stomach bug, nothing too serious. He should be fine, but Kjerstad still not in the lineup. And, you know, I don't think they called him up just to sit on the bench. So clearly he's either about to start getting some playing time, or he'll just go back down to the minors, because as we know, the Orioles have no shortage of reinforcements just waiting. Coby Mayo and Connor Norby have been absolutely tearing up AAA. So they could be very far, not far behind him.
And I could totally see the Orioles, like with the run they've been on. I say as they lose to the Athletics today, the run they've been on, I mean, they could play a just if it ain't broke kind of deal where, you know, their outfielders are hitting, they're doing well. Hey, why interrupt things? And so, yeah, it's messy. He could be called up. if someone in the lineup gets injured and Kjærstad gets called up, I would absolutely keep an eye on it and see how he does. But until he proves at the major league level he can have good at bats, I would not roster him.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. So on the other end of the spectrum, we've got a player who has been off to a very hot start this season, but is still not that rostered and could very well be available in some of your leagues. Danny Jansen of my Toronto Blue Jays. You know, he started the season on the IL and has been on a really hot streak lately with a 260 average and a 370 OBP. I mean, those are good numbers for anyone. If you're getting that at the catcher position, I think you're pretty happy with what you've had for Danny Jansen so far. What do we think about Danny Jansen? Do we think this is a hot streak? Do we think he can keep this up?
I believe in it. I think Danny Jansen's always been kind of one of those guys he's sneaky good. He just can never play. I mean, fittingly, he's just now coming off the injured list to start the season. But I mean, he's always had positive WRC plus. Like he's good with the stick from the catcher position. If you're above league average hitting, like that's a win, especially like once you start to get into the morass that is two catcher leagues. But it's only been less than 10 games, only a smattering of plate appearances, but he's fared out really well by our PLV hitting metrics. He's been making great decisions, really adding contact to the balls he does swing at. Same thing with his power. I think he's kind of a under the radar guy, because I think he'll, especially now with this hot start, is a lot of his performance has been, he's got three doubles in eight games in addition to a homer and a couple other singles, but it's just like, that's not going to show up on a lot of box scores that people are paying attention to, but it shows that like he's really hitting the ball well right now. And he's always been a guy who he'll take his walks. He doesn't strike out. That like, he's a very high floor catcher. And I think that he's showing he has the potential to be an above average hitter in his own right.
Yeah. Kyle touched on basically, my thoughts. Like Jansen has consistently hit well at the catcher position. Do I buy into this burst? Like the batted ball data backs up the results, which is interesting. But with small sample size, sometimes you always got to take even the XWOBA versus WOBA things. It's way too easy to fall into that trap of, this guy's a 420 XWOBA. He's fantastic. Small sample size can throw off even anything. And, two barrels can radically alter that. I think that Jansen, if he is close, he has a high floor, but we've seen in 2022, he was that excellent hitter at the catcher position and he has that in him. And Mr. Goggles, I do like him. I get him. I don't know. If you have an all on base percentage league, get him. He's good. I don't have great analysis here. Sorry, I don't have much saber metrics. I don't have much wisdom here. He's slugging 522.
Yeah, I think sometimes that's all you need to know. The stats just speak for themselves. And I mean, he's only 33% rostered according to Fantrax right now. So he is definitely widely available. I know I checked before we started recording, he's available in two of my leagues, and I went out and put waiver claims on him in those leagues because I do need to make some changes at the catcher position. And he's also going to get playing time. He's not the kind of guy that you have to worry about, what happens if he has a cold streak and he starts to struggle a little bit. The Jays have shown in the past, they're more than comfortable rolling both Jansen and Kirk out in the lineup on the same day. And frankly, with the way that Toronto's offense has looked so far to start the season, Danny Jansen's going to get all the playing time in the world as long as he's hitting like this and could be hitting fourth, fifth in the lineup because most of this Toronto lineup is not doing pretty well other than, maybe Justin Turner and, Davis Schneider. I think that's about it. So he'll definitely get playing time. And I think if you've got a catcher with that much playing time and that kind of upside, like Carson said, just go out and get him. There's not much more to it. So moving over to Carson, your Minnesota Twins here. I know we had a bit of a debate before we went on air about two interesting players on the Twins, Trevor Larnach and Austin Martin, who both seem to be very interesting ads here, in my opinion, at least. Very different profiles, but what are your thoughts on these two as our resident Minnesota Twins expert? And who do we think would be the odd man out when Correa returns? Because he might be back as soon as this week.
Trevor Larnach has, both have these guys have interesting histories. Larnach has been in and out, and I want to, of the Twins lineup for ages now. And I want to know, I wonder how many options he has, because he's routinely been someone that's gotten playing time and has hit kind of like a high 600s, low 700s OPS. He's been there, low batting average, some pop in his bat, you know, that kind of hitter. We were talking about it right now, by the way. I'm just going to read off his slash line. You know, it's 379, 441, 655. I don't think he was in the lineup today, which obviously, you know, that's ridiculous. Now, here's why I am skeptical. I'm not even skeptical. I don't trust it. Here's the teams he was hitting off against: Detroit, Chicago White Sox, and the Angels. Those are not three, you know, say what you want about Detroit, but those are not three teams that invoke senses of like great pitching. And, you know, the White Sox, obviously, I mean, I think I can get a hit off of half their pitching staff. Like, Larnach has some pop in his bat when he makes contact, but the contact has been something, and you can see, look at just his batting averages, right? And maybe it seems silly, just, oh, look at the batting average. But, like, it tells a good story here of he just doesn't get hits very often. And a lot of that's of his contact ability. He has an all right eye, you know, and when he does make contact, it's pretty decent. But I just don't, I really don't buy it much. He's 27, maybe, you know, let me actually look up real quick his minor league numbers. I think with his profile, he's someone that hasn't shown in the past he's done too much. It's not like he was tearing up the minors either. They just called him up because mm-hmm. he was a warm body. I don't know. I would be apprehensive if you have him on your roster already. I think sell now. See if you can get some scraps. See if you can get someone here. I really don't think this is the hidden gem that's going to propel you to, you know, your championship. As for Austin Martin, he's very interesting. Totally different approach, contact heavy, not much slugging. What I think is fun with Martin is he is being played all over the diamond. And something that the Twins do a lot is they will use a lot of pinch hitting. They will use a lot of utility play. And so with Martin, he's had time in the outfield and in the infield. They still have Royce Lewis injured. Correa obviously injured. And let's be honest, probably someone else is going to be injured soon at this rate. I think Martin is fun because he's going to get a lot of playing time, and I think he's going to have consistent at bats. I don't think he has a terribly high ceiling, but I do think that he has shown that he can stay in there. And I think he can be a decent like bench utility guy as someone you can slot in on off days, if you really need to on, you know, for infield and outfield. And there's some inherent value there.
Yeah, I agree with the Austin Martin thing. Position versatility has a lot of value. I think that's one thing that I've been able to capitalize on a lot, of just being able to maximize a roster every day of the week, and especially in like a daily lineups league. Like, that has value. That, like, you know, maybe it's a two, maybe he gets one hit, but you know, you get a hit, you get a run, sneak it, luck into a couple stats here and there, and like, that's beneficial. I'm a little suspect on any upside for him. Like, I think he's maybe a decent floor, low ceiling kind of hitter to me. I mean, even last year in AAA, he had a 106 WRC plus. Like, that he's a guy, six home runs and 250 PAs. Like, these are, it's bottom of your roster, waiver wire kind of things. And I think the position versatility is maybe the most valuable thing he brings. As far as Trevor Larnach, I think I like it. I don't think he's going to like Carson said, he's not going to keep this up. I mean, he's running a 429 BABIP. That's outrageous, especially for someone who's not really fast. Like, he's not going to leg out a lot of those infield singles. But I think the power is legit. He's always going to have some contact issues. Like, last year, ran a 34 K percent. His career is 33. Like, the dude strikes out. It's under 21 right now. Like I was saying, like, yeah, those hits are falling, so he's kind of getting lucky. But I think the strikeout rate isn't so terrible that it's a deal breaker now. And I think that will allow him to kind of tap into that raw power that he has. And he has been making just generally good decisions, double digit walk rate his whole career. Like, I think he's a guy that's going to be a good source of power. The bat's good enough. He's going to get playing time. They've been hitting him for, like, top of the order, third, fourth, sometimes second, sometimes fifth. They've shown that they'll play him in the outfield. They'll DH him. You know, it's not quite the versatility that Martin brings, but it is, like, they're showing that they're willing to get him into the lineup however they can and in a good spot in the lineup. And I think that kind of speaks to his staying power a bit.
I'll have to put a coin in the jar for you, Kyle, but I do think Austin Martin reminds me of, like, 2023 Michael Garcia at the plate. At least, maybe not in the raw exit velocity, but at least in the outcomes of someone who doesn't whiff a lot, you know, has decent strikeouts and walk ratios, and, like, is able to, in a key position, at least defensively, provide some batting average upside. And I do think with some additional positional versatility, like, he's already swiped a couple bags. The Twins swipe fewer bags than anyone, but I think he's nice. He was also a little banged up a bit last year, so perhaps there's still some rehab from that. I like that you said, yeah, Justin, like, you're keeping in touch with all your former Blue Jays guys. Like, it's always in the back of your mind. Course.
Austin Martin's definitely one of those that lives rent free in my brain.
Oh, for sure. But I mean, if you are in a categories league with batting average and could use some bench utility, maybe with some slight stolen base upside, I think there's some nice stuff there. His batting average right now is, like, 226. His XBA is 275. So I think there's I think it'll go up. And I think that he's proven himself, at least in the lineup, to be, like, he'll be on the Twins roster with some playing time, at least in the near future.
Yeah. You know, I like the Michael Garcia shout out there. I know you and I are both fans of him. Had to come up on the podcast naturally. So moving over to the Los Angeles Angels, we've got just a little bit of news here with Zach Neto and Nolan Schenwell, who seem to have flipped spots in the lineup, with Schenwell moving to the bottom of the lineup and Zach Neto starting to hit second a bit more often. Obviously, Schenwell has been struggling to start the season, but, you know, what do we think of this? Are we interested in any of these guys, or is this something we can move on from?
Nolan Schenwell is my favorite. Is he good? It's like a great philosophical question. He walks a lot, and as a fan of sabermetrics, I should like that. But it's like one of those, I don't know, sometimes you see the silly questions like r/baseball of, like, would a guy that can't hit anything but gets on base 35% of the time be valuable? Like, that's what Nolan Schenwell is. He's a philosophical baseball question in a player. I like him. He's fun. I want him to do well. I don't trust his bat, obviously, but I trust his eye. And I think if he returns to the plate discipline that he had last year, his numbers have gone not the way they should. But I don't know. I kind of believe in him a little bit.
Yeah, I think I really liked – I agree. I always like these, like, super outliery, unique profiles. And so, like, a first baseman with a 0.055 ISO last year – who was also above average at hitting, like, that's, yeah, give me all, like, that's amazing. That's incredible. 400 OBP. But the problem is this season, him and Zach Neto are hitting like speedy middle infielders, and only one of them is that. And that's the problem. Is like, I didn't think here. I thought that Shanwell's ISO was the floor last year. It's 0.039. That it's somehow gotten even lower as his K rate's gone up, his walk rate's gone down. I know we've talked a lot about it. It's early in the season, but like, he's the kind of like, as fun as that profile is philosophically, it needs to be operating on all cylinders to even be functional, either in reality or in fantasy. And right now it's not operating there. And so he's providing you zeros across the board. I like Nito. I think I liked him a lot going into this season. He also has not been performing super well, but at least he has defensive value. So he should stay in the lineup longer. And then he's shown a willingness in Ron Washington's stolen base happy Angels that, like, yeah, he might be able to get you a couple bags to lead off. I think he can tap into that like mid to high teens power. And I think that's, you know, that's a useful profile, especially if it's hitting leadoff in front of some guy named Mike Trout. That I think that's a profile I like. I wasn't a fan of him hitting in the nine hole, even though they claim that he liked it. I don't get that, but like this seems like a functional, like the batting order seems functional and like it makes sense. Pushing Shanwell down the list, having Nato lead off. I agree with this, and I think this pretty much just ends any fantasy usability for Nolan Shanwell.
Yeah, it's definitely difficult. I think Shanwell is probably someone that is droppable in your leagues right now, but is somebody worth keeping an eye on. I mean, it's important to remember just the rocket ship that he's been on over the last year. Hasn't even been a full year since he was drafted, you know, has just been on an absolute rocket to the majors. So I think maybe sort of like what we touched on with Jordan Walker early in the podcast, maybe he'd be better suited to going down to AAA for a little bit, let him figure things out, get right with the bat, and then maybe we'll see some different results later from him in this year.
Yeah, I'm drooling on that 133 ISO from his AA last year. If only he could hit that.
Nolan Shanwell really is like, what if Juan Soto couldn't hit? it's so funny.
Yeah.
I love him. I hope he figures it out.
Oh, for sure. Like, baseball is more fun if what he's doing works.
Oh, hell yeah.
Definitely. I know he broke a lot of dynasty leagues last year when he got called up, and a lot of people were like, sort of, are we going to allow this pickup? What is the rule here? We don't normally have players that are drafted making the majors this quickly. So moving on to our next player here. I know this is one where, Kyle, you and I actually have a bit of beef here in our TGFBI league, as we are both fans of him. And unfortunately, you beat me out on this one. Keaton Wynn has been just having an absolutely incredible year so far with the San Francisco Giants, and somehow still seems to be flying under the radar, is still widely available in a lot of leagues right now, only 62% rostered on Fantrax. Kyle, what do you think of Keaton Wynn? Obviously, you outbid me, so I know you like him as well.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of all Keaton does is win, because he's just been dominating this last stretch. It's kind of like the Shanwell, like, I'm a sucker for a unique profile, that his primary pitch is a splitter. And I think that's incredible. Like, I think that's so fun. I think I saw Eno saying that he wasn't allowed to throw his slider when he was recovering, and so he just got really, really good feel for his splitter in the minors. And then that's just like taken off, and that's his carrying pitch. And it has to be, like, he has, I think, an objectively bad four seamer. Like, it sits almost 96, sure, but it just doesn't have the moving profile. It's like the definition of a dead zone fastball. So I think he's going to live and die with that splitter, which is a scary thing to say, but he's shown that he has kind of that ability to feel it and command it and locate it well. It's a pretty solid pitcher's park in San Francisco. That'll be good. I mean, you don't, it's tough. Don't start him against the Dodgers kind of thing, but I think against most other teams, and we talked a little bit about this before the pod, but even in Colorado, like you have like, yeah, Coors is terrifying, but the Rockies are really bad. So it's just like, if you're starting against an average offense in any other park, more or less, that it's, you can start him there and be pretty comfortable with it. And so I think he's absolutely, I'm stoked. He's found money. Absolutely. And he's been carrying my pitching stats. I don't think he's going to continue doing, performing how well he's been performing. You know, he's not going to be at the top of Nick's list anytime soon, but I think he's absolutely a guy who will stay on your roster, who, if you want to, you can really target matchups and get good results out of him.
Kyle, what do you think of a comp with from Keaton Wynn with like Nathan Eovaldi? Because I'm looking at it now, they have the same velocity on everything.
Yeah, I think, yeah, they've got the same velo. I like, that's tough. I like Eovaldi's fastball a little bit better. I mean, that's not saying a lot. I still don't think it's a good fastball, but I think that's pretty spot on as far as like functionally having a splitter primary kind of guy, same like velo band, kind of similar stuff. Yeah, I think that's great. I think if he can harness it and get, you know, Eovaldi's had some really hot stretches over the last 2 years. And I think, yeah, great comp. And it might even be that he might just be a lesser known, more available Eovaldi.
And someone with better defense and a better park behind him, because the Giants defense this year is great. I mean, they're really, really excellent. And I think
adding Matt Chapman makes your defense better.
Jung Ho Lee, you know, all that. But also, I mean, like Patrick Bailey behind the dish, and someone mm-hmm. who's one of the best, like Bailey behind the dish is huge. And Wynn had a great start today against the Pirates. He was really effective, and he allowed, you know, you'll look at his, what he did today, and he allowed some hard hit balls, but they're hard hit balls into the dirt. And it's something that makes him more appealing is, you know, he hasn't really been prone to the big, you know, to just absolutely getting hammered on line drives and fly balls. If he's getting hitting hard, you know, it's not, it just doesn't seem like it's too, you know, the exit velocity alone doesn't scare me. Right. It's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I like Keaton Wynn. I am now a proud shareholder of Keaton Wynn in one of my leagues. And I think he is a good pitcher.
The seal of approval.
Yeah, there you go. I don't know. I don't have much more interesting analysis than that. It's just, yeah, I think he's good. I like the peripherals. I like, I can't talk about the peripherals I like on here, but I like the, I like what I see.
Yeah, definitely. He's certainly a fun pitcher to watch. I'll tell you that much. I know he was someone who caught my eye very early in the season, just as, you know, someone who's fun to watch. And I'm like, let's just pick this up and see where it goes. You know, sometimes it's the best attitude in baseball is just pick a guy up, because you can always drop him later on if things don't go your way. And sometimes, you know, the guy like Keaton Wynn, it does go your way. And I think that sort of perfectly segues into the next pitcher we have going on, because Eric Fetty has really been rolling this season. And I think he's also another guy who's very much flying under the radar right now, has really reinvented himself. I know Cal and I have talked about it before on the podcast, but he still seems to be flying under the radar, because I know, you know, obviously he was not a good pitcher when we last saw him in the major leagues, but, you know, then he went overseas and sort of really reinvented himself. And this is sort of like Eric Fetty 2.0, or at least in my opinion. You know, what do we think? Do we think this is a hot start, or is this really Eric Fetty 2.0?
I think it's interesting that he has effectively two totally different arsenals based on his platoon splits. He does not throw his cutter nor his splitter to lefties, or to righties rather. He goes sinker sweeper against righties, and he goes sinker cutter splitter against lefties. And the sweeper isn't good yet. I think maybe, you know, there is some hope that it can be good, potentially, but it isn't at the moment. However, the splitter is great. I think that's, is that fair? It's a great pitch. Yeah, I mean, it is really, really been effective for him. And I think it's a totally different dynamic. We've seen a lot of different pitchers incorporate a splitter and it work really well. And, you know, year of the splitter kind of deal. I think maybe what's interesting, the sinker has a 298 xBOBA against so far. And you can't even blame AL Central for that because he's on the White Sox. He can't even be pitching against them. So he's been effective. And that sinker also was a crazy high whiff rate, 31% on that. I like it. I like Fetty. I think there's a lot on his profile that is good. He now has that off-speed swing and miss pitch. And effective against left-handed hitting. I whip of 1.07. I mean, he's been on fire, and obviously, I think he's going to get a lot of innings because who else are they going to turn to? I think the White Sox can be really good. Is he going to get wins? No. Can he do everything else? Yeah, I think so. I really think like this could be a very, very good season. And I think there also very quietly, there could be a decent chance that he could get traded to a team at the deadline that might win games. And that could be another dynamic for some of your leagues if you're in those. So I love what I've seen so far.
Hey, the White Sox just swept the Rays. Okay. They're a real MLB team. Just don't ever look at their lineup. No, I agree with everything Carson just said. I think like it's a fascinating profile. He's another kind of guy who I'm fading his fastball so hard. I generally am not a fan of sinkers, but I think his is especially not a good sinker. He locates it well, but it's just like, it's 93. It doesn't move a lot. I think it's weird to say that a guy's primary pitch is a show me sinker, but like, that's kind of what I feel like. But then that allows him, like, I think the sweeper has a ton of potential. That I think especially in some of the stuff that I've been working on, if he throws it a little bit harder and tighter, more like in that 84 mile an hour band, that it could really be a weapon. I think the cutter does a great job of being that kind of like hard gyro-y kind of ball. Like a lot of guys have that bullet slider, and I think that his cutter works in the same way. And then Carson touched on the splitter. The splitter's legit, and that gives him kind of, it helps him with his platoon advantage for both handedness. And I think like, I like his secondaries. I'm a huge fan of all of his secondaries and like their movement, how they play off his alleged fastball. But I think he does a really good job of locating. That's one thing that's really stood out in some of the work that I've been looking at. And also some of like the publicly available like pitching bots command model, that he does a great job of locating pitches in places that benefit him. And so when you combine that with some pitches that have a lot of interesting physical traits, I think he's absolutely the kind of pitcher that like, you think like, oh, he's on the White Sox, they kind of suck, whatever. But like, there's a legit pitcher here. And I agree that he's also has his, I guess, former MLB life working against him of like, yeah, don't trust the feds line, you know, that he would always put that. And that was about Eric Fede. And it's just this is a new guy. This is like, it's high praise this season, but it's like, all right, imagine Shota Imanaga. There's like, yeah, he's a 30-year-old that came over from abroad, and now he's got like a legit arsenal. And like, if he never pitched in the majors, we would have a different mentality of who he is now. And we really shouldn't. We should listen to who he's telling us he is, and who he is a very cool pitcher.
His fastball is weird, and I'm really looking at it now. And you know, honestly, his whole thing, I might even really like bust open WordPress and start writing about it, because I do think it deserves some more attention. Yeah, right. Like you're right. The movement, nothing special about that sinker except it gets 31% whiffs so far. I don't know how it does that. You can't see it, obviously, but Kyle just gave one of the best shrugs I've ever seen. I don't know. It's an interesting pitch. And like he has some secondaries that work for him and a sinker that so far has worked for him. Like people just haven't been able to hit this very hittable pitch. It's still a small sample, obviously. You know, we'll see what happens if he faces Los Angeles kind of deal, but like I mean, I'm looking at some of these sinkers right now, and like none of them are particularly interesting, and yet despite that. Either way, is he good? Is he legit? Yes. Ignore pre-2023 Eric Fetty. He is not the same guy. Totally different. Imagine he is at, like, I think the Imanaga thing is cool. Like, imagine he just came over from Japan, mm-hmm. or Korea in this case. Like that's what we're dealing with. Totally different pitcher, totally different arsenal, and totally different results. Dude's legit.
Yeah. I mean, speaking to the results in that command we were talking about, he's got 20 strikeouts, zero walks in his last 14 innings pitched. That'll definitely do.
That'll play.
Yeah. I mean, granted, that's coming against a not so good Tampa Bay Rays offense and a banged up Minnesota Twins offense. But I mean, look, a lot of one of the biggest knocks against him is that division that he's playing in. As we mentioned, you know, he's not going up against the White Sox because he's on the White Sox, and he's going to get to take advantage of some of those offenses in the AL Central all season long, or at least as long as he's on the White Sox. So I think he's definitely a player worth keeping an eye on or grabbing in some of your leagues right now. He's only 70% rostered in Fantrax leagues, so he's still available in many leagues if you want to go out and get Fetty. And like you said, Kyle, I think it's time that we can start trusting the feds here. So moving on to an interesting debate we had before the podcast, I want to get your thoughts on here. We were having some conversations about this Minnesota Twins bullpen, because I know it's a small sample size, and especially when you're looking at relievers, we're looking at even smaller sample sizes. So it can be very difficult to know what exactly to do early on. But I think there's a lot of good options in this Minnesota Twins bullpen right now. And one of my favorite options, at least, seems to be just completely under the radar. And that would be Cody Funderburk, who also has one of the better names in all of baseball, I might add. What do we think about Cody Funderburk? Because, you know, this is a guy that's only 3% rostered in Fantrax leagues right now and just seems to be striking up batters for days.
So Funderburk is one of, I think, two lefties, if I'm right, in the Twins bullpen. The other one is Thielbar. They added like a half dozen new lefties, so our new pitchers. So sometimes even I can't keep track of it all. But Funderburk will get options against lefties, and that's where he's going to see a lot of use. He has been, I think, surprisingly good. I don't even think anyone, even in my, like, you know, Twins, I don't think anyone, even in my Twin circles, like, were talking about the guy beforehand. He gets called up and it's been, dicing up batters, in nearly 24 innings. He has a career ERA of 1.54 over the last 2 years. So it's not like it's new. What does like ring some alarm bells, and what is a bit weird, is like his xera is crazy high. I mean, this year a small sample's always mess with things. That's the disclaimer for this whole podcast, by the way. We're still in April. But like his xwoba against is 349, walks 10% of batters. He has great extension. He gets a ton of ground balls. He has swing and miss stuff, and you like that, but he doesn't throw the ball hard. And he does get banged around at least a decent bit, doesn't get a ton of chases. He is an interesting case. I like him. I'm thinking. You can't. Yeah, I'm making a thinking face, and then I realized you can't see me thinking if you're listening to it. So I have to. I'm
really spelling it with that. The I like him.
That's exactly it. That's what I'm. I like him? Question mark.
Yeah, I think I'm glad that you guys brought him up because he's a guy that's been really interesting to me because I've been, you know, hammering away trying to work on our PLV version of a stuff model, and his fastball graded out super well, his four-seam fastball. But I'm looking at it now, and the reason is because he throws three fastballs. He's a primary cutter kind of guy, and so the four-seam can play off of that, and that works in a very interesting and helpful way. And so that's fascinating because I was like, it's 92. It's got 10 inches of rise on it. Like, this is not some monster fastball, but it's just the interaction of his pitches kind of makes it for a greater than the sum of its parts kind of situation. I'm like, I believe in my models, but part of me is like, I don't know that this seems like one of those weird edge cases where, like, I think something's getting missed here. I don't know. It's another, you know, we've been talking left, right, and center about all these guys with interesting profiles. And it's just like, that's another one. Could be cool. The results speak for themselves. ERA wise, not so much FIP, and definitely not XERA, where he's almost at a 5 XERA. But, like, I mean, he's almost a 30% K rate, 10% walk rate's not great. Like, this is something where there are times where uniqueness, especially in a reliever, where they're not going to see you more than once, that, like, if you throw something funky, like Paul Sewald style, that, like, you can get by on that, on just messing up hitters' timing.
I've talked with Kyle before about, like, pitch modeling and stuff, and how different pitchers can have odd results in that despite the results. And I'm going to coin this now. Sometimes a pitcher's funk factor is left out of the pitching modeling equations just by nature of things, whether it's at, like, it just, I mean, whether it's timing, an odd delivery, whatever it is that Tyler Rogers does, you know, like, I don't know what you can call it. I'd say submarine. No, that's just alien. I think there's just, like, Funderburk has a good bit of funk factor. Say that 10 times fast. Yeah. That is that does make his stuff and his pitching ability play up despite some peripherals. That being said, I am still, like, skeptical. I'm not I don't have no anxiety when I see him come into the game, but, you know, he's interesting. The show notes do say, is Cody Funderburk the best Twins reliever? No, he's not. Sorry, Justin.
No, because Griffin Jacks exists.
We had a joke we were talking about before the podcast. Like, we should have an hour long episode just talking about the Twins bullpen, because I feel like we can totally do that. And so, like, we can't stick on here too long, but I know me and Kyle absolutely could.
We have opinions. That is for sure.
Oh, definitely. I love it. And I love the funk factor. You know, Cody Funderfunk, that should be his new nickname.
Yes, well done.
So just to, before we wrap up here, I know there are a couple of prospects that have been
Hold on real quick, Justin. Justin, we forgot Seth Lugo. We haven't talked about Seth Lugo. Justin, I need to talk about Seth Lugo.
It's all right. This is why we edit things.
What do you mean? We're not keeping this in?
Oh, we'll keep it in. So we also got Seth Lugo, Kansas City Royals starter. Has sort of moved around over the years between the bullpen and the rotation, but really seems to be absolutely rolling right now for the Kansas City Royals. I know I did the reliever ranks on Friday night when he was pitching, and, you know, I think he was one of the better pitchers on the day, and that was a night where we had 14 starters getting a quality start. So there were some great performances out there. What do we think of Seth Lugo so far?
I think he has a 15% strikeout rate. Like that's kind of my vibe on Seth Lugo in a nutshell. From like a more like granular level, we haven't recorded as throwing seven different pitch types, which is Yu Darvish territory. You should not do that. And like one of the things that I'm looking at is like the fastballs are bad. He should do the Funderburk. Get some Funder Funk in on this on his pitch profile. That he should lead with his cutter. I think he has a really good cutter and he could play off of everything else like that. He should, like, you know, me pitching analyst, pitching coach Kyle is just like he should axe his slider, focus more on the sweeper. I think that's a much higher upside thing, although he does struggle to locate the sweeper. And, you know, Lugo's not going to be a 30% K guy, so maybe sacrificing some command is not the way to go. But I'm just so skeptical. Like, I have no problem with, like, low stuff, weird profile guys who can succeed. I fly the flag of the Michael Wacha fan club, but this just ain't it. I think that he passes the eye test, but I just can't see like a 5.5 K/9. Like, he's just not, that's not sustainable. And like, frankly, from a fantasy standpoint, that's not even really useful. If you're relying on a guy who doesn't strike anybody out to return good ratios and get wins a lot, like, you're going to be playing with fire because sometimes he's not going to have it. And like, the Royals have been super hot, but, you know, maybe they turn back into a pumpkin and then the team context isn't that great. So I applaud anyone who's been starting him. And, you know, maybe this is a Vargas rule kind of thing of you start it until the wheels fall off and then you just drop him and remember the good times. But like, I can't see it.
Seth Lugo is a fraud. Listen, that's why I'm excited to talk about this. Seth Lugo has a home run to fly ball rate of 4.3. I don't care about Kauffman. That is ridiculous. He has a strikeout rate below 5.5. That is not going to work. His ERA is like 1.6. His FIP is 4.5. Listen, I don't care what you think about FIP. If you're striking out 5.5 batters per nine, that's like, we're talking like that's 1930s level, dog. That is not going to play against actual hitters in that, you know, work a real job. He's still walking two batters per nine. Home runs is half a home run per nine. That's not going to last. Nothing about, like, there's nothing actually special here. I mean, he's still a spinny curveball, man. His spin rates are nuts. But, I mean, he throws a ton of pitches. Only like 30% of them are actually good. It's sell him now. Sell him yesterday. He doesn't extend. He doesn't get ground balls. He doesn't allow soft contact. He doesn't throw the ball hard. He is... like, I like him as a pitcher. I think he's fun. Do I want him on my team? No. Sell. Fraud.
Yeah. I mean, look, the funk factor is definitely lacking there with Lugo.
He's got some funk, but like, it's not enough funk.
He's got the kitchen sink approach. Like, that, you never know what he's going to throw. Like, they're all kind of bad, but like, you still have to guess which bad pitch it is.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note, too, we brought up the 15% K rate. You know, that's including 9 strikeouts through 7 innings against Detroit the other day. So that's including that big performance. I agree. I think this is probably, like you said, Kyle, a Vargas rule, where you can probably ride him for a couple more starts. You know, he gets my Jays next, which, unfortunately, we have not been a good offense so far this season, and then the Brewers, but... you know, I'm with Carson. I would absolutely be trying to sell right now while I still can, or you'll probably wind up dropping him to the waiver in a week or two.
His K minus walk percentage is 9. That's just funny.
That start at Detroit, which is a great start, all of your pitchers at Detroit. That's a bad lineup in a pitcher's park. That one start, he started 6 games. That is 40% of his strikeouts this year. like fully 40% good. Of his strikeouts came against a bad Detroit team in one start.
Yeah, like, sell now, please.
Get out while you can.
Yeah, I don't know if Jason Vargas even did that himself back in the day. So, moving on to some hot prospects that are tearing up the minor leagues right now. There's some interesting names that could be making the majors quite soon over the next couple weeks or couple months. We've got Aurelvis Martinez of my Toronto Blue Jays, Coby Mayo and Connor Norby. I know we touched on the Baltimore Orioles a little bit earlier. And then also, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Christian Scott of the New York Mets. What do we think of these young guys? And you know, are we stashing them now? Or are these guys that we need to wait for them to be called up?
I think, I mean, I know you guys are leading the hype train for Aurelvis and Christian Scott, respectively. So I'll talk to the Baltimore side of it. That, I mean, the Baltimore player dev program is a juggernaut. Like, how are they calling up guys with like 150 WRC pluses in the minors every other week? But like, I don't understand like how they keep doing it, but like they can't keep getting away with it, but they do.
Helps when you have the number one pick like 3 years in a row, but
it does. But like, Coby Mayo's like fourth round pick, Connor Norby's second round, so like not quite the pedigree of like a Jackson Holliday or Kjerstad, who is second overall, like we've been talking about. But it's still like they just know how to get the best out of their guys. It's the problem. The flip side of that is, that's a packed roster. Like, you've already got reigning rookie of the year, Gunnar Henderson. Like, you've got, like we talked about, Ryan O'Hearn, Manning first. You had Jackson Holliday. Now you've got, I think, Jordan Westberg's performing pretty well for them. That Jorge Mateo, I think, gets a bad rap, but he's been a very useful MLB player like for the last 2 years. And so it is just like, I think they're good prospects. But unless there's an injury, I'm skeptical of like where consistent playing time is going to come from, because they've got solid starters who are performing well. And like, I think, like, don't get me wrong, I like the Coby Mayo profile. Like, he seems like he's added a little bit of speed to his game. He's got 3 stolen bases and 120 PAs this year. That's a easy double digit pace, in addition to pretty decent. He's got like 70 graded raw and game power from Fangraphs. Coby Mayo is a little bit more of a hit over power kind of guy who will get you into, like kind of 20 homers, 15 stolen bases, which that's nice from a second baseman. I think these are like, I know Carson kind of talked about it in like a derogatory sense, but in like a nice sense, these are kind of quad A guys. That like, these are guys, and maybe that's just in relation to the Orioles organization, but that they're just like, they are good players. They just maybe aren't good enough to be like, they would be starters on a lot of other MLB teams, but they're just not for the Orioles. And I think that makes like rostering either of them tough again, unless there's an injury or unless like someone's performance really tanks like Jackson Holliday style, but they already have replacements for him.
Yeah, let's be honest. Mayo would be hitting cleanup on the White Sox. I think Mayo, out of the two prospects here, I think Mayo is a much more interesting case. I think he's a stronger bat. He's 22, like a young 22 at that, and he's absolutely just crushing the ball because every single person is in Baltimore's AAA team. I do like
that. I would just like to let the record show, Carson, that I know that you're almost there, but all 22-year-olds are young. There's no such thing as young 22. It's all of them.
I mean, like, okay, you're right, but it's like 22 years and 4 months.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, it's even lower on the spectrum. Thanks, Kyle. Justin, talk about your Blue Jays guy.
Yeah, so I mean, Aurelvis Martinez has been absolutely demolishing baseballs in AAA right now. He's got 7 home runs to start the year and a .307 batting average. I know one of the big concerns with him coming into the year was the strikeout rate, He's lowered that. He's down to a 21.9 K rate right now. The defense, he has been struggling a little bit, and I think that's maybe why Barger got the call up over Arelvis. But he has shown that he's a good defender in the past, and I think that's something that, you know, he just needs a little bit more time to work out some of the kinks in AAA, and he'll probably be with the Blue Jays in short order, especially because, you know, like I've talked about on the podcast, this offense is not doing well. A lot of that does come from the top of the lineup, but there's certainly room for him on the depth chart, you know, either pushing Kevin Biggio into utility role or Isaiah Kiner-Falefa or both, depending on whether or not Barger sticks in the majors. I definitely think there's room for playing time here. And, you know, if he keeps hitting in AAA the way he's hitting right now, he's going to be with the Blue Jays quite soon. There's few prospects in the minor leagues, I think, with his combination of just pure raw talent and the ability to walk into playing time on what hopefully will be a good lineup as that top of the order starts to hit and the Blue Jays start to call up some of these young guys and get the bats rolling.
Is it my time to shine? Oh, my. Okay, so the last guy here, Christian Scott. I wrote a 3,200-word article on Christian Scott back about a month ago, saying Christian Scott is almost ready for the big time, and I'm going to make the claim. I'm making it here. I'm making it now. Christian Scott is the best pitcher right now in the Mets organization. He's ridiculously good. I think, like, this is a guy that I look at what he's been doing, and his command is fantastic. Great control, great command of his pitches. And last year, he was absolutely ridiculous in a short stint. There was some skepticism about if he could really make that conversion from a reliever to a starter role. So far this year, he's absolutely just been fantastic. He's added a sweeper, which has been extremely dynamic, has tons of arm side or glove side movement with very relatively little vertical break to it, or vertical depth, which is actually makes it really, really effective. He has a surprisingly gnarly changeup, a fastball that sits in the mid 90s with a low ish arm slot and really good vertical and horizontal movement. Think like a Joe Ryan with a couple more ticks is kind of my comparison. And he has a really nice cutter, gyro slider to boot. I think Christian Scott's fantastic. I mean, he strikes out like, I don't know, it's something like 12 batters per nine. He walks very few, and he has been susceptible to the long ball a bit this year. That is concerning, but none of them, I think Syracuse has a bit of a smaller park, and I looked at some of these home runs, and a lot of them are wall scrapers, and how that'll play in a larger park or Citi Field, you know, that's a bit interesting. Either way, a lot of them are solo shots anyways. He doesn't allow base runners. I mean, and for a team like the Mets, who are looks like their lineup is coming together this year, it looks like they're going to need some rotation help soon. Christian Scott, I think it's only a matter, not as if the talent is there, it's a matter of when the organization wants to make the move. So I have him stashed in my leagues. You should have him stashed in your leagues. Christian Scott's the man. I think he is, like if I'm making player comp, I've comped him to George Kirby. Maybe not quite with a prodigious command, but like, really similar in terms of the pitcher profile, and like a Joe Ryan kind of someone who could just absolutely pound the zone with a plus fastball and really just have excellent stuff that plays up from maybe its raw velo numbers. And I think Christian Scott is a superb pitcher. I think he's one of the best pitching prospects. He's under the radar. He's available probably in your leagues. And you should absolutely go get him if you have the space for him. I'm not biased at all, by the way. But.
Oh, definitely not. I couldn't agree more. I definitely think that Christian Scott is probably the best pitching prospect out there right now, at least in terms of proximity to the majors. I don't know if the Pirates are going to have enough incentive to call up Paul Skeens anytime soon. But yeah, he's definitely somebody I'd be picking up. I was just looking in my TGFBI league the other day to try and stash him and realized he's unfortunately not in the system yet. So I have to wait for him to get called up. But in any other spot where I can stash Christian Scott and I need some pitching help, I'm absolutely doing it right now.
Like, I want to shout it from the rooftops. Like, this guy is the next big thing. I mean, I seriously, every single start I see from him, he started today and he didn't even have his best stuff. He was pitching on 4 days rest. He only got 2 strikeouts. His velo was a bit down, but I mean, he still was really difficult to hit despite that. And it really just proves to how good his command is, that he can hit the shadow of the zone, that he can paint the corners, that he can make these pitches difficult to hit, even if his stuff isn't playing well. And when it is playing well, you know, his fastball sits 95, 96, and it can play up, and it's really excellent. And then the secondary stuff just blows everyone else away.
Yep.
Get him.
Definitely some names you need to go out and get right now, because there's probably going to be a lot more call-ups over the next couple of weeks as we move past a lot of the service time dates and injuries start to build up. Teams maybe look at making some changes.
As arms continue to explode.
Exactly. But that's going to be it for today. I want to thank you guys both so much for coming on. I appreciate it. It's great to have you guys both on. Please don't forget to follow the podcast at Outside the Box PL. Myself and Callan, you can find me on Twitter at HavelockJustin and Callan at Callan_Elslager. Carson and Kyle, where can we find you guys?
You can find me. You can find my articles, obviously, on Pitcher List. I should have someone coming out next week on a particular pitch that is what I am deeming the most ridiculous pitch in baseball. So stay tuned to that because it'll be a fun read. You can find me on Twitter at PL Carson with a 0 instead of an O. And for all my wacky baseball takes and raging every time that Carlos Santana strikes out.
Yeah, and you can find me on Twitter at Blandalytics. I try and post a lot of the fun charts that I've put together for our PL Pro subscribers. We have a lot of cool tools. I'm splitting our PLV weekly article series, which has been a blast so far. I just had my first one come out on this last Wednesday. I'm also in the near future going to be putting out a couple research articles for some of the pitcher side stats that I've been talking with Nick about. Hopefully we should have some cool new ways to judge how a pitcher is performing and frankly, just how nasty they are. So look for that in the next, in the coming weeks. Should be a lot of fun stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I know we've got a lot of exciting content coming out on the site right now. I'm going to be doing some more reliever ranks articles in the future. I just put one out on Friday, and I've got more coming up soon on the calendar. And then, of course, you can always find us in PL Plus. I know three of us are always in there, always hanging out, talking baseball, talking about fantasy advice. So don't forget to join our PL Plus Discord. But that's going to be it for this week, and we'll see you guys next week.
Thanks so much, Justin. Thanks for listening, guys.
Thanks, Justin. Thanks, y'all.